Welcome back to the Real Talk with Dana podcast, where we talk all things nutrition, health, fitness, and mindset with a healthy side of sarcasm. I'm your host, Dana Montes of Real Food with Dana. I'm a nutritionist and body image coach, teaching women how to heal their relationship with food and their bodies, ditch the diet cycle for good, and truly thrive with real food, one delicious meal at a time. This week on the podcast, we have Gina Jones, who is a registered dietitian, registered and licensed dietitian, who has had her own share of health struggles, like pretty much everyone listening to this podcast. So from a challenging relationship with food starting as a child through getting diagnosed with an autoimmune disease, at times it felt for Gina like she was dealing with a double-edged sword that made recovery from both so much harder. And today on the podcast, we're going exactly into that. So we're also going to be going deep into talking about disordered eating, autoimmune disease, and how you have to be extremely careful with elimination diets, even when they are done for autoimmune or other health reasons. We're also discussing what we called reintroduction paralysis, molecular mimicry, the health stigma around nutrition practitioners, and what it is like to work for the Cleveland Clinic. But before we get to the episode, a couple quick updates for you guys. So I just got back from another trip. This time I was in Las Vegas for a wedding with a bunch of my friends. And yes, I am writing a recap post with all of my favorite things to do and restaurants that are gluten-free friendly and all that kind of stuff. So you guys can look for that soon. And now, without any further ado, let's get to the episode.
My name is Gina Jones. I'm a registered and licensed dietitian. So a little bit about my background and kind of what I do. So I've been working at Cleveland Clinic Center for Functional Medicine for the last year and a half. And 2 weeks ago was my last day. So I just left to kind of pursue my own businesses. And we'll talk more about that in a minute. But just kind of my path up to be a dietitian was, I think, similar to most practitioners that are in that functional medicine and integrative medicine space. So I feel like most of us, if not all of us, have some type of like personal connection to it. So basically what happened for me is that as a child, I had a lot of stressors, and I also had a lot of, looking back on it, some disordered eating patterns that I don't think were recognized back then. But basically what happened is I was in marketing, and I was working at a Fortune 500 company for about 4 years. And I became pregnant with my first daughter when I was at that company. And I just became naturally interested in making sure that I was doing everything I could do for my baby and for my body. And I was experiencing some little minor hiccups. So I was started to become interested in that. I took some holistic nutrition courses as well as acupressure courses, which was like super cool, kind of opened up my mind to some different things. And I started seeing chiropractors. So just kind of in that more healthy like mindset. Well, after I had the birth of my daughter, I got really, really sick. So like super sick, things that I've never experienced in my life. I was calling 911 probably 4 to 5 times a month, feeling like I was having a heart attack. I was having panic attacks, feeling like my throat was closing. I was having really bad symptoms. I was just like horrendous at the time. So then about 4 to 5 months later, I went to ER one day during work on my lunch break and found out that I had a goiter. Okay. I went and followed up with an ENT, and they told me, hey, you probably have thyroid cancer, which was like a huge blow to me. And I ended up not having thyroid cancer, thank goodness. But then I was properly diagnosed with Hashimoto's. So whole new world for me. Didn't really know what autoimmune diseases were at that point in my life. So what I ended up doing was my sister was actually studying to be a functional neurologist and a chiropractor at the time. So she hooked me up with a functional medicine doctor, and they had me follow this elimination diet that, if you're familiar with Dr. Karatsian, so it's a more strict version of AIP, and I followed that for a really long time. it really did help me. So I was able to find out some of my food triggers. I think I stayed on it a little bit too long, a little bit longer than I should have. But it did help me kind of come up with, what my triggers were and how to heal myself. So in about 8 months later, inflammation drastically reduced, thyroid levels were coming back down into normal. So that basically led me into, hey, there's, something's going on here that I'm enjoying. So I ended up going back to school. I got my master's degree in clinical nutrition from Case Western Reserve University here in Cleveland, Ohio. I completed a 1,500-hour clinical dietetic internship with Cleveland Clinic as well. And then I went on to work for Cleveland Clinic Center for Functional Medicine up until about 2 weeks ago. So it's been a journey for sure. And I created a food business in the middle of all of that as well. And have two daughters, so it's been nothing short of hectic, but it's been really good, and I feel like I've found my calling.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for sharing that. I want to dig a little bit deeper into your story. When you said you were doing the program with Dr. Karasian, yeah. What did you mean when you said you stayed on the protocol a little bit too long?
Yeah, so the doctor that had me following this diet, it was a modified version of Dr. K's program. So it was a little bit more strict. So on AIP, you can have bananas and dates and things, where this one took out all of the high glycemic fruits. Because I was having reactions to the thyroid medications, I was breaking out in hives. I was just told to continuously stay on this diet until symptoms kind of resolved. So it was about 8 months before I was like, you know what? Like, I need to just try a different food. And the first food that I reintroduced was dates because I wanted something kind of sweet. So I felt like I just stayed on a little bit too long because it started to have an impact on my mental health and related to foods. So then I realized later on, legitimately scared to reintroduce things like nuts. It's been years now, so I've successfully introduced all seeds and all fruits and all vegetables and all of that kind of stuff. But there's, it plays a huge role in your mental health when there's nobody helping you through that aspect of it. And I didn't really see it until I became a dietitian. I thought it was completely normal to kind of eat that way and for extended periods of time until you're like, hey, wait a minute, you probably should be, branching out and having a more varied diet.
Yeah. And I think that's a really interesting point to bring up, that when you do have an autoimmune disease or if you have a certain health condition that kind of predisposes you to be recommended one of these healing diets, right, which can be super, super healing. But if you don't take a multifaceted approach of not only trying to heal your physical health, but also getting support with your mental, emotional health at the same time, really easy to kind of slip into patterns of feeling really socially isolated and if you have any kind of history of disordered eating or controlling your food, of slipping back into those tendencies. So what was that part of it like for you?
So I did experience some of that social awkwardness for sure. So going to parties and packing my own food and, so everyone's asking why you're packing it. And I still have to talk with a lot of my clients about overcoming that as well. So I think there's a fine line. You have to do what's in your control to make sure that you're healing, right? So for, autoimmune diseases, gluten and dairy are, really big triggers. So maybe staying away from those things was super important. But I think I stayed away from things like the nightshades a little bit too long or the nuts and seeds a little bit too long. So there's definitely parts of it that you have to overcome mentally. And I think when I had the most amount of healing is when I was following the diet and I was doing acupressure and chiropractic and yoga and I was doing all of this stuff and was really feeling better. And then when things started to become busier, you're like, oh, okay, well, I'll just focus on the diet part. That's the easiest. And then you're like, a year later and you're like, hey, wait a minute, I need to introduce some foods. So I think there's always there's always, you know, an aspect of the diet. I'm a dietitian, that's what I deal with. But at the same time, like you said, you really have to make sure that that mental health part is there, especially if you know yourself that there was some type of disordered eating patterns in your past. You really have to kind of tune into yourself. And I think when you're so sick, it's hard to do that at first.
Yeah. And it's also like a double-edged sword when you have a history of those patterns and when you have an autoimmune disease or some other kind of health complication, because on the one hand, your recovery voice or the voice that's telling you, like, we want to get away from dieting and the yes, no foods and everything, like you want to incorporate more foods. But mm-hmm. then on the autoimmune disease side, it's like, well, I know I should be avoiding gluten and dairy, for example, for autoimmune disease, because sure. there are so many research studies that say they mm-hmm. can make autoimmune disease worse. But then the other things like the nightshades and the nuts and seeds aren't necessarily a big factor in all autoimmune diseases. Like they definitely right. are in some, but then the right. problem is like even those foods become fearful aside from the whole dieting perspective, like from a right. symptoms perspective, like as right. someone with an autoimmune disease, you become fearful that if I eat these yeah. foods, not only am I gonna, you know, spiral out of control because it you hit the might as wells, right? Like the, oh, yeah. I ate some nuts, I might as well eat the dairy and the gluten and all these things. And then you sure. know you're gonna have a flare. But it's like, I then become afraid of eating these foods because I think they're going to make me have a flare. So how do you right. deal with that?
Right. So when I was going through like the really, you know, bad portion of the autoimmune disease, I'm pretty much in remission now. But my main symptom was that I felt like my throat was closing up. So it was really hard to eat. It was really hard to know whether or not you were having an allergic reaction to a food or if it was just, you know, inflammation. It was really hard to differentiate between the two. So my philosophy after becoming a dietitian is to never start with the absolute most restrictive as you can. It's to, you know, take out gluten, dairy, added sugar first. And then if we need to try things like eggs and nightshades, we can always tweak and get more restrictive if necessary. But if you're seeing healing, you know, my goal is always the most amount of healing with the least amount of restriction, right? So I wish that I would have had somebody that told me that in the beginning, because you almost get this type of reintroduction like paralysis or reintroduction fear like you're talking about, because I feel really good after 8 months on this diet. Now I'm scared to reintroduce really easy things like vegetables and fruits, right? So there's such a mental component to it. And I think when all of these restriction types of diets started to come up and be more prevalent, like 7 years ago, 6 years ago, there wasn't a whole lot of people talking about this. So I think that there were so many people just kind of diving in and following it and not really ever knowing how to get off.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really hard situation to be in because right. it's like you don't know what to do. You know, that paralysis of, well, I feel really good and I'm finally in remission and it's taken me right. so long to get here. And what if introducing tomatoes could be the thing that like sets me back 6 months or something like that. So of course there's this fear mm-hmm. that introducing these foods is just going to make me sick all over again. But I think the interesting thing that's also playing in here is we've had these voices of diet culture, like screaming in our yeah. ears for basically in our entire lives.
Yeah, 100%.
And then it's like, well, is it the autoimmune disease that's making me fearful of introducing these foods? Or is it that diet culture voice that's telling me, no, I'm sticking to my yes, no foods list because I feel like I'm in control and this is what I should be doing?
Right. And I think like for me, there was a combination of that a little bit. So as a child, I remember the first time I went vegetarian, I was in like third or fourth grade. And I'm like, that's really young. And I was, I'm Italian. So I was a pasta vegetarian. Nobody told me how to be a vegetarian. It just kind of went out there and did it. And so it's like really hard to know like, okay, well, there is probably starting to be some disordered eating because I wasn't eating the right foods. I probably had nutritional deficiencies. And then you take that mindset with you into an adult plus an autoimmune disease. So there's that really fine line of, you know, necessary restriction versus, you know, what's the word, like voluntary restriction, right? So it's really hard. And I think that anybody that kind of goes through an elimination type of diet needs to work with a qualified practitioner, number one. And two, like you should probably be seeing some type of health coach or therapist or somebody that kind of helps you along that to say, yeah, you're a qualified candidate for this, or no, you're not. You know, so even at Cleveland Clinic, I've worked with quite a few eating disorder patients. And yes, we can still do healing diets because there's so much of that brain gut access that like we really need to foster to make sure that you have good gut health so that the depression and other things start to go away. But there's a specific way of doing them to make sure that you are not fostering other disordered eating behaviors.
Yeah, so that was actually just going to be my next question. So when you do work with patients that, whether it's an eating disorder or disordered eating, or just a history of, you know, doing really well with yes, no foods list, let's say.
Right.
So
right.
In order to promote healing, but also prevent falling back into this restrictive eating for the sake of dieting and controlling our size and everything, when you get someone with that kind of history that then comes in with an autoimmune disease and mm-hmm. you're thinking in your mind as a clinician, okay, I know, you know, based on the research and clinical experience, I do want to eliminate dairy and gluten in order to help heal the gut-brain axis and the microbiome. How do you explain that to a patient in a way that can prevent them from falling into the yes, no foods list and these are bad foods, even knowing that those foods could be promoting inflammation in an autoimmune disease?
Yeah, sure. So first of all, I always frame it as adding things into the diet first, right? So adding more vegetables in. Let's concentrate on getting this many different colors into your day. So really making sure that we're adding the things in that they're missing now. If it's really necessary, so for instance, I have a Hashimoto's patients, and there's tons of research that shows the molecular mimicry between, gluten and your thyroid gland, then we can swap it out. Like, okay, let's not do regular bread. Let's do this gluten-free bread, and I can recommend some healthier brands. And I always frame it too as like, this is a treatment plan, right? So look at this is a 6-week treatment plan, an 8-week treatment plan. You will come off of this. This is not going to be lifelong, you know? So more of a discovery plan, less of a good food versus that bad food type of idea.
Yeah. And then for anyone who doesn't know what molecular mimicry means, can you briefly explain that?
Sure. Hopefully I can do this justice. But basically, when you have an autoimmune disease, your own antibodies attack a certain gland in your body. So for me, it's attacking my thyroid gland. So gliadin is in gluten, which is the proteins found in gluten. And research is showing that when you're eating tons of gluten and you're having all of these antibodies built up, they can look similar to like the thyroid gland, and then it mistakes them and will actually start to attack your thyroid gland when you eat gluten. Gluten actually looks very similar to the dairy proteins as well. So that's when you get more of that molecular mimicry. And that's why gluten and dairy are two of the most common inflammatory foods, because they're the two that are attacked most by your antibodies.
Great. Thank you. I'm sure that there are a lot of people that don't really know what that means. And that was right. Actually a very good explanation from like, you know, a scientific perspective, but also not making it like so nutritional biochemistry that people can understand.
Okay. Good.
So I want to switch gears a little bit from talking about patients and stuff and talking about our personal stories. So sure. I know we were speaking like back in January when we were talking about coming on the podcast and stuff.
Yeah.
And you had started writing a blog post about your own relationship with food and how it's changed, but you still have plenty to go. So could you talk about that a little bit more?
Yeah. So like I said, it's still in progress. I have not posted it yet. But you know, as a child, like I said, I went vegetarian a few times, and then I went vegetarian again. It was late high school, all through college. I had restrictive eating. So for a portion, and almost nobody that I work with knows this either, but like a, a portion of my childhood, I was really restrictive on my eating as far as the times that I would eat. I would go really far and not eat for long periods of time. I was never diagnosed with an eating disorder, but it was definitely disordered eating patterns for sure. So then I think all of that mindset kind of happened when I had to go on another restrictive eating program with autoimmune diseases. I introduced seeds and I introduced some nuts and I introduced a lot of these things, but there was a few things that I was still really fearful of introducing. And I would only reintroduce foods if my husband was home and to make sure that if there was a reaction that he was around, because for me, my reactions were always in my throat and I was always really fearful that it was a true anaphylactic reaction. So I was always taking these extra precautions when I would introduce the food, which made it really difficult because my husband works a full-time job and then has a second job too. So it's, you know, it wasn't really easy to like reintroduce when somebody else was home or around me. So I've been truly working on it, like really hard, like knowing that any food that I've ever introduced has never created a problem for me. There's never been a food that I tried to reintroduce so far that has, you know, given me bad symptoms, right? I've accidentally, and this is, you know, funny story looking back on it now, but not so much, but I accidentally ate cashew ice cream one day, thinking that it was coconut milk ice cream. And I had not had cashews in years. And I literally, when I found out, I cried. So the name of my blog is going to be I Cried Over Cashews because it was eye-opening that I was sitting here crying over the fact that I ate cashew ice cream. And, you know, I'm a dietitian and I'm telling people how to manage their diets. And it really hit home for me. And I have lots of support from, you know, some health coaches that I used to work for and other dietitians that I used to work with as well. So I had a really good support system that was around me that helped me kind of work through some of these things. But it's, especially if you had disordered eating patterns in your past, it takes a lot of mental work to kind of get through all of that extra baggage just to be like, yeah, this is truly food freedom. Like, I'm never going to introduce gluten and dairy again just because the research and Hashimoto's and knowing what's kind of going on. But all of the other foods, there's not too many left now, but there's some foods still that I need to introduce, and I'm actively working on it.
Yeah, I mean, that's throwing an even bigger wrench into the equation, right? Because The symptoms that you experienced were like similar to anaphylaxis, like, wow, I might die, right? Basically. Right. Right. And which is why you always wanted to have your husband home and probably had an EpiPen handy and all this stuff, which is interesting because normally when we have fear foods, mm-hmm. it's not like a fear for your life, right? But in your situation, it was. So like, of course you were scared of introducing the food. So that was like a whole nother thing. But it's interesting too, what you said about like, as dietitians, nutritionists, health providers, we feel like we should be at this stage of like, recovered enough and extremely knowledgeable and in a place where like you can get to where I am kind of thing. It's like, it's hard because you feel like you have to be good enough as a practitioner before you can help people. It's kind of like when you first start out in practice and you're like, what do you mean I can help people? Like, I don't know anything, because the more you learn, the more you realize you don't know. But then when you're practicing, it's like people are coming to me because even though I don't know everything and I will never know everything, you still have a very vast base of knowledge in order to help them, both from your personal struggles and then the 1500 hours of clinical work plus all of the time that you spent in school.
Right. 100%.
It's a lot. But I mean, I also appreciate you sharing all of that because it helps to know that even practitioners still continue to struggle with this stuff. Because I know for a lot of the clients that I work with, and I'm sure a lot of the patients that you work with, it seems really intimidating to think about your health as a destination and somewhere that you have to get, because you start to learn when you start working with people and figuring out all this stuff that like your health is not a destination. It's a journey, right. Especially when you're working on something like an autoimmune disease, which can go back into remission at any time, or if you're dealing with a history of, you know, and it's complicated relationship with food and your body, because it's never going to be 100% perfect. And then it's also learning, like, we need to work on healthy striving, as Brené Brown would call it, as opposed to perfectionism, because perfectionism is like how we got here in the first place.
Right. That's, I love what you said, because I tell a lot of my patients, they always, I'll get some private clients that want to cancel because they feel like they haven't done enough before our next visit. Right. And I'm sure you get that too. And I always tell them, like, that's the time when you need to come in, because you need support. You need somebody there that understands what you're going through. So a lot of my patients don't know my entire story. So I think that if they hear this, I think that's, you know, I appreciate the platform, because I think it's helpful for them to realize, like, you know, even as practitioners, we still need some help too along the way. And like, you just had a huge change, right, with what your philosophy is. So, you know, moving towards that mindset of like, we're here as a support system. This isn't like you come in, I give you a diet and I don't see you again. This is more of an ongoing relationship where we can help people thrive and really understand how their body changes over time and how to really make sure that we're manifesting some good.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you bring that up as well, because I was actually just talking yesterday with one of the coaches at the gym where I coach, and there's this, like, there's a perception and kind of a stigma that if you're a nutritionist or a dietitian, like, you have to be healthy. Like, you can't be healthy unless you're, you know, like, you couldn't be this profession if you weren't healthy. And then if you're a personal trainer, like, you can't be a personal trainer unless you're super fit and everything. But it's interesting when you're on the other side of things and it's like, well, practitioners see each other too. Like, there are plenty of health practitioners that see therapists. And of course we all go to doctors and, you know, everything like that. And personal trainers go to nutritionists and they go to therapists and they go to health coaches and everything like that. Like, just because we're practitioners doesn't mean we have all of our shit together.
100%. Yes. That's a huge stigma, I think. And that's why I think a lot of people are fearful even in the beginning to even come see somebody, right? Like, they're, you've probably seen it as well, but a lot of people will even like lie on their diet recalls, or they'll, you know, because they don't want to tell you the entire truth because they feel like they're being judged. So that's actually a part of like my platform too, is that I really make sure that a lot of my patients and clients understand kind of, you know, not all of it, but a lot of the background that's relevant, at least, so that they know, like, hey, there was a starting point for us too. Like, we didn't come out of the womb just eating broccoli. Like, that's not what happened.
Yeah. And I think that it also helps when you're coming, when you have a background of disordered eating and you've worked hard to work your way out of it. Like, people who have had eating disorders or disordered eating and have worked through it are some of the strongest people that I know, because not only do you have to kind of overcome your own demons, but first of all, you have to admit them to yourself, and you have to admit them to someone else, because the like cathartic nature of telling your story, whether it's to a therapist or on a podcast or, you know, whatever it is, it takes a lot of courage to do that. Which is why I always start every single one of my sessions with new clients of, this is a completely judgment-free zone. It's completely confidential. Like, you can say as much or as little as you want. And of course, as soon as you get more comfortable working with a practitioner, you're much more likely to start opening up to them. Like, okay, let's be honest. The first time you meet with someone, it's not like, here's my whole health story and you know everything about me and I'm going to be completely honest about everything. And I would never expect that of someone in a first session, because even if you've been listening to my podcast or you know my story or everything, like, you don't completely trust someone the first time that you meet them. And that's okay. Yeah, you have to build it.
Yeah, 100% agree with that. I get a lot of patients though that, which is really interesting because there will be things that they don't tell the doctor, they don't tell the therapist, they don't tell anybody, but then it comes out in our session. And it's like, you know, like, I'm really glad you told me this because now we can work through it, right? Like, this is something that they wanted to eventually get off their chest. They didn't know the right person to tell it to. But you know, it's a starting place. So I think that we do build trust because we're talking about one of the most intimate things, which is like food, right? And your diet and your habits
and your body. Yeah,
exactly. And we get really like kind of nitty gritty with everything, and you know exactly what I'm talking about. And so I think a lot of these patients or clients come up and they're just like, they eventually feel that trust and they can tell us things that they don't tell a physician because they're spending so much more time typically with the dietitian or the therapist than they are a physician. So it's also very flattering and humbling to be in that position too.
Yeah, definitely. So I want to switch gears a little bit.
Sure.
And talk about what it's like to work at the Cleveland Clinic, because yeah. As an outsider, but even someone who's in the healthcare world, like, you kind of hear about the Cleveland Clinic as this like heavenly type place, right? Like,
right.
Oh my God, if I have all these problems and I've seen all of the doctors, like, I'll just go there and I'll get fixed, you know,
right.
And it takes forever to get an appointment and it's probably going to cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. But like, if you're sick and broken and no one can fix you, like, that's where you go.
That's
and
where you
that's
go.
Where they fix you.
Right. So, it was kind of like serendipitous that like I ended up there. So I, you know, had this whole visualization process that I was going to go to Case Western Reserve University, which is a really good university. And I was going to get into the Cleveland Clinic program, which they only take 10 dietetic interns a year. So I was, you know, it was already slim chances. So I decided I was going to get into that program. And through that program, I was going to somehow get accepted into functional medicine and work for them. So I had this whole visualization process, and I still laugh about it today because it's just the way that it happened was exactly the way I planned it. But, you know, so at clinical rotations, it was everything from, you know, inpatient where you're doing like NST, which is the nutrition support therapy, doing, you know, outpatient, food service, pediatrics. You're really seeing the entire gamut. They have a very great program there, and you see so much that I felt like it really prepared me to really go on and do anything. So in that aspect of my life, it was very fast paced because you were switching rotations every 3 weeks and you were headed to learn, you know, new styles and new preceptors. And it is a really good hospital. So we were, you know, I was fortunate enough to be in some departments where it was like outpatient rotations that were focused more on like weight loss surgery and bariatric surgery. And I was in pediatrics, and my pediatric rotation was all GI related. So everything was very fast paced, loved it, really good. But I also knew in my end game that I wanted to be functional medicine. So some of it was hard to get through because I knew like this is probably not how I'm going to practice long term. So then I waited my entire 10 month of my hours. And at the very end, I got to do an internship with functional medicine. And I'm not gonna lie at all. When you get there, it is kind of like what you're saying, that moment, because you get in there and there's filtered water, there's filtered air, like they have a wellness certified building. It's beautiful. It doesn't look like anything you've seen the rest of the time you've been at Cleveland Clinic. So, you know, got to work with some of the top doctors in the world, including Dr. Mark Hyman. So really outstanding place to work. Loved it, loved the people that were there, especially because the people that come there are, you know, they're the people that traditional medicine gave up on or said, yeah, I don't know what else to do for you. So it's very humbling and honoring to like go into this position and being able to see these people and say, yeah, like it's not in your head. I know exactly what you're talking about. So I really enjoyed my time there, and really great doctors. We had about 7 physicians when I was there working, and all really, really amazing people, and really using food as medicine, really using, you know, natural approaches as much as we could to kind of heal people. And I saw nothing short of miracles while I was there. And, you know, saw some things that were more common too, but it was nice to like learn from and being able to see some of the most unique cases that you will see anywhere in the world.
Yeah,
so, yeah, very different from my clinical rotations compared to functional medicine, completely different worlds, but I really did enjoy both of them.
It's funny because when we were talking on the phone yesterday about this, like, I don't know why I just never thought of this before, but yeah. The Cleveland Clinic isn't only functional medicine. It's conventional
right.
medicine and functional medicine.
Right, right.
I don't know if anyone else thought that was the case, or if they didn't, or I don't know, maybe it's just me.
Yeah, well, you know, I see it from two ends. I have some patients that would come in there and they would be really upset because they had previously seen a doctor that didn't like fat. They just like, you know, didn't want to prescribe, you know, no avocados, no nuts, no seeds, nothing. And then they come into our department and we are so concentrated on healthy fats and making sure that you're getting enough at each meal. And they were very upset because they said, how do both of these departments, how are they both housed under Cleveland Clinic? So you have to explain that. And then you have people that come in that have no clue what functional medicine is, but they were told to come to us. So they don't have any idea what to expect, right? And then you have a third group of people that come in that they only want to be there because of functional medicine, because all traditional medicine has failed them. So you get really everything. So it is, you know, it's definitely a unique place and a unique position to be in.
Yeah. So let's change gears again. Because I know the first place that we met was at Expo East.
Yes.
A long time ago. I think it's 3 years ago at this point.
Almost. Yeah. 2016.
Yeah. And you have a really cool food product, which was born out of necessity because of your dietary restrictions for your autoimmune disease. So talk about that.
Yeah. So, back in 2014, I created this business called Crunchy Kitchen, and it's all allergen-friendly foods. So we ended up creating, or I ended up creating, a plantain-based wrap. So what happened was is that I was on this elimination diet, and I could no longer eat bread, and I couldn't eat grains, and I didn't have anything that was like a bread-like substitute, something like quick for a sandwich or a taco or just anything that had like some substance to it. So one day I was kind of like thinking, I was looking up replacements for like how to make like for an egg replacement for a binder, and came across that bananas were used as binders. Well, then I started researching more and I was like, well, if you can make a bread out of banana bread, I wonder if you can make something from plantains. And I had never eaten plantains before. So I tried a little bit of it and made sure that I didn't have a reaction. And then I started cooking with them. And the first couple times I made something, it came out completely awful because it was like plantain and coconut flour and it was just terrible. And but after a couple times, it started to like take on a life and started to be like a bread substitute. So I ended up one day late in the kitchen, just like completely starving and like wanting something that was not salad. I ended up making these plantain tortillas in my oven at home, and I brought them to my husband and I said, taste these. And he goes, why, what is it? And I said, it's plantain. And I said, I just want to make sure that it's good and not just good because I haven't had bread in so long. So he's like, yeah, these are actually really good. So I started like perfecting the recipe at home, and we did that, and we created a business from it, and we started selling, and found that there was a need out there for people that were no longer eating gluten or grains, that, you know, somebody needed a replacement. Like I would go to the grocery store and couldn't find anything that was just quick that I could come home and make in 5 or 10 minutes. Everything had to be completely made from scratch. And it was exhausting because I was a new mom and I had a new autoimmune disease and I was tired. And I just wanted something like super quick that I could just like grab and put together. So I figured if I was feeling like that, other people with autoimmune diseases had to be feeling something at least similar to that. So we made a company out of it, and you know, we grew, and now we're in places like Whole Foods and Heinen's and Mustard Seed Market out by us in the Ohio areas. So it's slowly been growing. And then when you met me at Expo East, we launched a waffle that is growing and will be in more stores soon as well.
That is so cool. And verifying what your husband said.
Yeah.
The wraps and the waffles are actually very good.
Thank you. And it's cool because there's no added sugars. There's no like binders or xanthan gums or any of these things that can cause problems for a lot of people. So it truly is a product. I always say like it's low histamine, it's low FODMAP, it's, you know, it's paleo, it's AIP, it's vegan, it's all these things. So no matter what you're kind of working through, it's something that can work for pretty much any lifestyle.
Awesome. And then last question before I let you go.
Sure.
Is I would love if you could share either a book or some of the resources that were really helpful to you in overcoming your autoimmune disease and food and body image stuff.
Yeah. So I think I just started, my first step was like listening to podcasts, believe it or not. So I was like listening, you know, I listened to quite a few people like Joe Rogan, and I listened to a lot of like functional medicine podcasts and IFM. And so a lot of the training that I was already going through touched on it. But then I also listened to several of Brené Brown's books on Audible. And then I listened to Girl Wash Your Face recently. So there's like quite a few that kind of, I think, started to help me. And I think honestly, above anything else was me just having the realization that, hey, you had a lot of stress in your childhood. You had some disordered eating patterns. That's okay. But, you know, you're in a safe space. It's okay to start to reintroduce food. So, I actually told my husband, and it wasn't long after that cashew incident. And I said, hey, listen, I've never said this out loud before, but I think I have a food problem. Like, I think that, you know, there's something going on. And he was like, okay, like, what do you need to do? So it was more of just having that emotional support rather than looking through, you know, books or anything. It was just having the self-realization and then being able to try to do something about it. And I did have, the other thing that I did is I did something called holistic psychotherapy. Are you familiar with that at all?
No.
So holistic psychotherapy is basically a therapy session that they kind of tap into your subconscious to kind of help you work through things instead of like just talking it out all the time. So that was a really big help too. So I did podcasts, I did books, and I had, you know, social mental support.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing, and thank you so much for coming on today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate that. And I appreciate you being able to help me share my story.
Of course. And then tell people where they can find you and Crunchy Kitchen, all the things.
Sure. So I have a private practice for functional nutrition. It is inwcenter.com. So Integrative Nutrition and Wellness Center.com. You can find me on Instagram at GinaJonesRDN. And then Crunchy Kitchen is at Crunchy Kitchen, and the website is crunchykitchenfoods.com. And then for people that are in Ohio or local, you can find our products in Whole Foods, Heinen's, Mustard Seed, and a lot of local places as well.
Thanks for listening to Real Talk with Gina. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with your family and friends and share the love by throwing us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, which will help spread the word and do a small part to correct all of the fitness and nutrition misinformation or bullshit that's out there, which is only causing people to become more unhealthy. Come find me anywhere at Real Food with Dana on Instagram and Facebook. Join the Real Talk with Dana Facebook group for more support and discussion on these episodes. And come hang out over on realfoodwithdana.com for the show notes and totally epic and delicious recipes.